threat of rising seas away from the coast and facing the increasing cost of higher seas. Welcome to the Florida Roundup here on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Today, another conversation about the invading sea. The Miami Herald, the Sun Sentinel, and the Palm Beach Post, with reporting from WLRN, have teamed up to address the threat of higher seas to South Florida. That threat stretches well beyond the coastline. It could seep into our drinking water. How does sea level rise jeopardize where we get our drinking water? State and federal funding for projects to deal with higher sea levels is rare, leaving local governments looking for ways to pay. Where does that money come from, and are you willing to pay more in taxes or fees to adapt to higher seas? Sea level rise is one of our greatest threats facing South Florida. How concerned are you about it? 800-743-WLRN on the telephone, with your phone calls up after the news. Welcome to the Florida Roundup here on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening. Today we're focusing again on the invading sea. Sea levels are forecast to rise at least 2.5 feet by the end of this century compared to the mean sea level that we experienced in 1992. The Miami Herald, the Sun Sentinel, and the Palm Beach Post, with reporting from WLRN, have teamed up to address the threat of higher seas to South Florida. You can find the coverage at theinvadingsea.com. And you don't have to have waterfront property or work near a beach to be threatened by the higher water to come. The higher seas are pushing into the source of our drinking water right under our feet. The higher seas threaten to push up the cost of insurance across the region, and the higher seas could push up taxes and fees as governments look for money for projects to prepare for and deal with the water. Sea level rise is one of the greatest threats facing South Florida, so how much are you concerned about it, and what prompted you to care? You can call us 800-743-9576 here on WLRN. Kimberly in Boca Raton sent us this note. My whole family lives here, and I'm worried about setting down roots myself. It's so expensive to live here, and there's a good chance that any home I buy would decrease in value over time. She continues that when I learned that most of Florida is only a few feet above sea level and would have no chance against the type of sea level rise projected, that's when I became concerned. Brian in Biscayne Park, regionally, he says he's concerned. Locally, not much. Brian says my house and property are not affected by it in the foreseeable future. Is that true? David in Miami Beach says that he believes sea level rise is the number one threat currently facing our country and the world. He goes on to say sea level rise is visible in Miami. High tide on sea walls is near the top. A low-level hurricane flooded Brickell. Our streets flood at high tide. Brian says, as a homeowner on Miami Beach, this is an existential problem. I love my home and community. I love our natural environment. I don't want to lose both. How do you save both of those right now and going forward? 800-743-WLRN is our telephone number. The invading sea, rising seas, and the threat in South Florida. 800-743-9576. Nancy Ankrum, the editorial page editor for our partner, the Miami Herald, is back with us. Rosemary O'Hara holding that position down at the South Florida Sun Sentinel. And Rick Christie doing the same at the editorial pages of the Palm Beach Post. All three of you, welcome back. Here we are again, the invading seas. Great to have you.
Thank you.
Let's start with the threat, Rick, of away from the coastline. There was a guest column published this week by the papers regarding the threat to our drinking water. What is the threat to the drinking water in South Florida posed by higher seas?
Well, and this has been going on for a bit now, but the threat basically is that the rising seas are pushing salt water further inland, which is actually contaminating our drinking water supply. And so it's honestly going to make it more expensive, for us to have drinking water or clean water, any drinking water in South Florida. And not only that, just to cause problems for our agriculture at some point, as well as all of the people who are moving here. So saltwater intrusion is a real problem being experienced, particularly in Broward County, I think, at this point, and is also encroaching in Palm Beach County and even into the Everglades.
Nancy, is this threat appreciated in the scope of rising seas, do you think?
It should be. It should be. I think that, this region sits on porous limestone, and rather than blocking salt water, rather than blocking contaminated waters, mm-hmm. it pushes west, as Rick says. There are communities in Miami-Dade County, such as Westchester, nowhere near the ocean that flood regularly. And this is the problem.
It's the topography of our land here, the oolite limestone, Nancy, that you talk about, the Swiss cheese that's under our feet, but also, you know, the crest that goes along the highest elevation in South Florida is generally closer to the coastline, and then it backs down slowly as you get further out west. So the rainwater collects on top, flooding, mm-hmm. and then the saltwater pushes Rosemary underneath with the freshwater sources.
Right. Yeah, no, it's a real problem. Fortunately for Dade, and Dade, it seems like it's a leader on dealing with the issue of well fields, which it's a big field full of wells,
yep.
that are, you know, stuck in the ground trying to pull up drinking water. For Dade, they've moved all of those out west. In Broward, though, we have not done that. And part of the issue in Broward is that there are so many different city-run utilities, water utilities. So now, like Dania Beach, their drinking water wells have saltwater intrusion. They can't use Hallandale, same problem. It's 6 miles inland now. The wall of saltwater intrusion in parts of Broward is 6 miles inland. So cities are going to have to turn to their neighbor and say, hey, can we buy water from you? Problem is, the neighbor didn't plan for them. They don't have the capacity to do it. And in the meantime, because saltwater is coming up underground into the, you know, pushing things up, the ability to... The system is getting infiltrated, and everybody's having a problem.
Well, you know, when we think about the sea level rise threat and water, we think about the South Florida Water Management District. You think about the state level environmental agency. You think about the Environmental Protection Agency. You think about kind of coastal protection. You don't think about your local county or city water and sewer department as on the front lines of sea level rise.
Yeah, that's right. You know, I don't know that I realized that all these cities had their own little water utility departments, just like, I guess I haven't really, across the state, there are all these municipal electrical companies.
Yeah.
But at the local level, then you get down to these soil and water conservation districts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Nancy and I are going into our election season where people come in and ask for our endorsements, and it's a tidal wave of candidates from the U.S. Senate through the legislature, school boards, counties, cities. And when we finish that work, the call that will come into our phone is, and who should I vote for the Soil and Water Conservation District?
Right.
Well, those races are starting to become more important.
Absolutely, absolutely. I know I have gone to the election ballot, looked at the ballot, and gone, holy cow, who are these people and what are these positions? Well, you know what? They hold sway over this very precious natural resource. And Rosemary's right. We've got to start paying more attention.
Yeah. And Rick, you mentioned agriculture. When we talk about fresh water usage and demands on fresh water, certainly when it comes to Dade County and Palm Beach County, a key component there is the agriculture industry. And as Nancy says, these soil and conservation districts become awfully important in the years ahead, given the trends that we've seen with the brackish water and the intrusion salt water in the aquifer.
Right. And as agriculture continues to pull more water out of the ground, one of the things we need to keep in mind, too, is that Florida is still growing. Our population is still growing. And so we're talking about somewhere around, what, three million more people moving here in about another 20 or 30 years, something like that,
mm-hmm.
you know. And so as more water is pulled out of the ground, that also pulls more of the salt water into our well fields to replace that, because, you know, there's a vacuum that has to be filled. And so one of the things we also need to be looking at is water conservation, a little more at water conservation as well. And also in terms of, do we start looking more at desalinization and so on, and all these things cost money.
Yeah. Yeah, well, desalination especially, it's not only expensive to build, it's expensive to run because of the energy costs that are involved with trying to extract the salt. 800-743-9576, we are with the trio of the opinion page editors in South Florida from the Miami Herald, the Sun Sentinel, and the Palm Beach Post. Your phone calls on the invading sea, how concerned are you about higher sea levels? What prompted your concern? Why are you dismissing the concern despite the science. 800-743-9576, 800-743-WLRN. We asked our listening audience over the last several weeks about this concern. Mary Jo Augerston lives in West Palm Beach. She told us the threat of sea level rise wasn't on her radar until 2013. Now she's an advocate for climate action, but she wishes she had acted sooner.
My grandchildren, who are just leaving their teens, going off to college, are facing a dire future. Wherever they live, I'm concerned that even if we paid attention to the science and we try to move to adapt, it is now really too late. Since I'm approaching my 80th birthday next year, I am sad I woke up too late, and I'm angry that there's so many like me.
Greg Hamra lives in Coral Gables. He's the group leader of the Miami chapter of the Citizens Climate Lobby.
I was born in Miami, just a few feet from Biscayne Bay. So I'm extremely concerned about sea level rise, not only its costs and other local impacts, but worldwide. And whether it's sea level rise or fires in California or crop loss or dying reefs from ocean acidification, or increasing human health impacts and human migration, also known as climate refugees, most of us realize these are all parts of a bigger problem, global warming, predominantly from the use of fossil fuels. So while the impacts are felt locally, the solutions have to be global. So what I'm doing about this is getting active politically.
So how about you? Are you getting active politically one way or the other on the issue of sea level rise in South Florida? 800-743-9576. Part of our conversation here at WLRN with our Invading Sea program with the Miami Herald, the Sun Sentinel, and the Palm Beach Post. Let's begin in Palm Beach County with your phone calls. John in West Palm Beach is on line two. John, you're on the phone. Go ahead. John, you're on the radio.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, loud and clear. Go ahead.
Hey there. No, I'm really more concerned with why we want to deal with the water, but instead of dealing with the actual problems, we just pump water out. They just approved the concept of construction of a mall in the Everglades. We keep dealing with pumping Lake Okeechobee into the ocean instead of letting it flow back into the Glades. And I get people live there, but they shouldn't have moved there in the first place.
Yeah,
and dealing with water the way Florida is supposed to deal with water is probably our best course of action. And nobody's looking at that.
Nobody's looking at that. All right, John, you bring up an interesting point about the development of the large mall that's essentially on the border of Miami-Dade County and Broward County. The name of this mall escapes me, Nancy.
Right. It is the American Dream Mall.
The American Dream Mall. That's right. Yeah, a big one there on the edge of the Everglades, not quite in the Everglades, John, or the edge of the developed area that we have. But it brings up a great point about development. And Rick Christie, you've mentioned this, the continued population growth here. How are we to think about development in the future? Real estate has been the past, present, and likely the future of South Florida when it comes to a significant industrial component to our economy.
Absolutely. At what point do the stakeholders, the decision makers come together and decide not everyone who wants to live here can? And it's not a matter of putting up a stop sign at the border that says the state is closed. It's a matter of pulling back, of rezoning, of incentivizing what developers build to make sure that they build in resilient elements into whatever it is they're setting down.
Not only where they build, but how they build in
Absolutely.
Some cases. Right. Mark in Miami, you are on the radio. Go ahead, Mark, your thoughts.
Yes, I've lived here since 1983, and I'm concerned that you're concentrating the blame of this problem on sea level rise, when what I've heard since 1983, when no one was talking about sea level rise, is the problem is more associated with the lowering of our freshwater aquifers, a result of overpopulation. I would like to add that beach erosion and all the rest is also much more a problem of overdevelopment than it is of sea level rise. So I think we should address the real problem here in proportion to what's causing our issues, and not do the more populist point of view here that it's just sea level rise. It's
Mark, I don't think anybody's claiming that sea level rise is the sole cause of saltwater intrusion. Clearly, it's a supply and demand of the water that's sitting in the aquifer. And as you mentioned, the demand that we have put on that aquifer has built for years over years over years, either through certainly through agriculture use, certainly through residential and commercial use, no doubt about it. But as that demand has grown, the sea level has risen in concert, and that continues to push against that fresh water as it continues to be drawn out of the aquifer. So I don't think one is mutually exclusive than the other, do you?
Well, exactly. No, I don't. But I think we need to explain this to our residents in proportion to what's causing the problem. And the problem is much more a result of aquifer usage than it is of sea level rise.
All right, Mark.
And your whole lead-in was on sea level rise,
which is one of the results is saltwater intrusion. Again, I don't think one is mutually exclusive than the other, Mark. I mean, there's certainly not related per se, but the result of the population use in the aquifer. You know, we are living in a 6 million person community today. Mark, when you got here in the mid 80s or early 80s, it was probably, Nancy, a third of that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, I think it is a complex issue. Unfortunately, it is not just an issue of science. It's an issue of politics. Each county has its resiliency officers, resiliency officer. They know this. They understand comprehensively the pressures, including what Mark is talking about.
Yeah.
The problem is getting elected leaders who are getting on board, but to really make a definitive and a resolute statement through their policy, through the votes that they take, that's going to take some doing.
Yeah, and Rick Christie, I appreciate Mark's point that it isn't one sole cause, that it is a nuance like anything in the environment. It is a complex system that we every day are building a body of understanding about how they are interrelated. But I suppose, and this is part of the Invading Sea Project and the communication here, that as we understand the nuances, that shouldn't stop us from having productive policy debates about responses and adaptation, Rick.
Yeah, I agree. I think what I was hearing from Mark is, and we basically are getting into this immovable object, irresistible force kind of thing here, with between real estate development in Florida, which, as you mentioned earlier, has been sort of our life, the lifeblood of our economy, a certain part of it, versus nature pushing back with sea level rise, and he's right, and we don't disagree with him at all. As I think the point you tried to make to him is that we need to be focused on all of this stuff, and that these things we need to address all of these things together. We're focusing on sea level rise with this project because we believe it is something tangible that people can see. We have described an editorial after editorial about the things that people can see lapping at their feet, that this is that you can see now that this is something we need to deal with, and it is going to get worse if we do not do something soon about this.
800-743-9576 to have your voice heard here throughout all of South Florida, the Invading Sea Project with the Miami Herald, the Sun Sentinel, the Palm Beach Post, and here on WLRN, our community engagement here on the Florida Roundup. Meg in Delray Beach on line 4. You're up next. You're on the radio, Meg. Thanks for holding on.
Yes. I'm right in sync with everyone else. A major concern seems to be the water supply, which is my concern, but also, you know, the fact that John brought up that we need to do something about restoring the Everglades and the water flow there, because the fresh water seeps into the aquifer, and that's where you want the fresh water to be. But I'm wondering, and I know this is way, way, like, impossible, but how would people feel about having a building moratorium altogether, just say, for a year or two until we can figure this out. Because the developers, I know there's an awful lot of big money involved, but the developers are just on a mission to build the biggest and the most, and the poor politicians don't have much choice because they find ways around it every time.
Meg,
and they build more units.
Let me put your blue sky idea to our esteemed panel here with loads and loads and years of experience. I will offer that perhaps what Mother Nature may not do to put a moratorium on the building, the economic cycle we know has done that over the course of many generations here in the housing market in South Florida. Rosemary, how about that idea?
Well, Fort Lauderdale, a group of citizens in Fort Lauderdale, more than 1,000 strong, signed a petition asking the city to put a one-year moratorium on big buildings east of Federal Highway because our pipes were bursting, spilling sewage into the intracoastal and other waterways, and boil water notices on drinking water continue to be great, and we're having to pay all these fines. And the pushback from the business community was so great that the city commission, as then comprised, you know, found a way to not have to follow what citizens want. So the business community is concerned about what we're talking about. And again, the reason these three newspaper editorial boards with reporting help from WLRN are doing this is we're trying to raise awareness across our region to the problem and to, you know, help get attention and focus on it. Yes, to Mark's point, part of it is development and how we grow. But part of it is that we need to start thinking about the pipes that are underground and the pumps that are going to be needed and how we grow. You know, when you talked about the mall out by the Everglades, over a year ago, Sawgrass Mills flooded and was closed for 3 days. The people in Sunrise and in Broward County government say part of the reason that happened is because of the way that mall was built, that there was not enough, there were not enough retention ponds built next to the mall, and that the mall sort of made a business case to say, rather than do the irrigation, we'll just agree to be flooded and close. Well, that's not worked so well for the public. Now, the city of Sunrise says it's going to have to chip in to fix the problem at the mall. So we need our local leaders, to Mark's point, to enforce building codes and comprehensive land use plans and push back against the enormous pressure that developers place because they want to make money and because Florida's economy is built on development.
Rebecca in Coconut Creek is on line six, also talking about code enforcement. Rebecca, you're on the radio. Your thoughts.
Hi. Going to the point that she just made, in Coconut Creek, it's part of the city code to maintain our green lawns. And I was actually cited for not using my sprinkler system to water grass in the middle of a drought. I had a brown, crunchy lawn, and they insisted and were going to fine me if I didn't water. I thought it was ridiculous to force people to water their lawn in the middle of a drought. And consequently, in a matter of a few weeks, it started to rain. My lawn turned green again, and everybody was happy. But this policy was just ludicrous. And I pointed out to them that the largest waste of fresh water is people watering their lawn. I think going to that point that we need to have a different approach from city and county officials. You know, Florida isn't always, can't be green.
There are some places in this country where having a brown lawn or having a gravel lawn is a place of pride for some homeowners. Those are in the really drought-stricken areas out west. Nancy,
exactly,
Ankrum, your thoughts.
Exactly. You know, I live in Miami Shores, and there has been a lot of push by many people in the community to get the village council to approve using letting homeowners use a variety of different ground covers instead of grass. Mm-hmm. Everyone wants the community elected leaders to look like Beaver Cleaverland, as do a lot of homeowners. But in the long run, this truly works against us. When we had watering restrictions a few years ago, yes, the grass was brown. But you know what? The ground cover was thriving
right.
and green
right.
and beautiful. Back it makes a real difference.
Rick Christie, back to native plants, back to native fauna and flora that have thrived here for eons with the wet and dry seasons.
Yes, and that a lot more of that needs to could be done in terms of helping with this overall saltwater and saltwater intrusion. I want to say that one of the things we're talking about here too, if I can, is that there's an incredible amount of pressure really in terms of dealing with this with the whole sea level rise thing on our local governments, as we started out saying. I was reminded when the previous caller was talking about getting looking more at codes and everything.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the reason for that pressure is because the state has pretty much abdicated any responsibility in terms of regulating growth in this state, and has fallen on the local governments to try to do something about it. But you know, it's been an incredible amount of pressure for them too, because it is a source of income for them.
That's
and
right.
they and in ma- and in many ways they're actually kind of being steamrolled because concurrency doesn't really exist anymore.
And the real estate and real estate development is a source of funds to help pay for the local projects to address and adapt the threat of sea level rise. That's what
yes.
we're going to talk about next, Invading Seas, here on South Florida with Rick Christie, Rosemary O'Hara, Nancy Ankrum, the editorial page editors from the Miami Herald, South Florida Sun Sentinel, and the Palm Beach Post, here with your phone calls, the rising cost of rising seas. How much are you concerned about it? We still have some phone lines open, 800-743-WLRN, 800-743-9576. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup on WLRN. Thanks again for listening. I'm Tom Hudson. The city of Miami will borrow tens of millions of dollars to buy pumps and raise roads in what's described as a down payment to help keep low-lying streets dry. Voters approved the borrowing just a couple of months after Hurricane Irma flooded parts of Brickell. This is Miami Mayor Francis Suarez this week on The Takeaway.
It really left an indelible impression, I think, on all Miamians that, hey, you know, forget about this macro concept and how it's going to affect us in the future. Let's talk about the present. What's happening now? So we have to adjust.
In the absence of federal and state dollars, local governments have been left to find ways to start paying for projects responding to rising seas. Beam Furr is the mayor of Broward County.
One of the main things we have to do is show that we have a strategy, that we know where we're going, because soon people that rate bonds and those things are going to come to us and they're going to be asking us, what is your strategy? So it's all of our problem. It's every city. That's the entire county. And it is, we all have to work on this together.
How to pay for it? Does it come from property taxes? Does it come from higher fees to pay for rising seas? 800-743-WLRN, 800-743-9576 to have your voice heard. The Miami Herald, the Sun Sentinel, and the Palm Beach Post, with reporting from us here at WLRN, have teamed up to address the threat of higher seas in South Florida. You can find all the coverage at theinvadingsea.com. Rosemary O'Hara with the Sun Sentinel, Nancy Ankrum with the Miami Herald, and Rick Christie with the Palm Beach Post back with us. Rick, I want to pick up on where we left things, which is local governments kind of picking up the tab initially here. What are the pots of money that they're drawing from?
Well, right now it is property taxes mainly. And then there are also some fees, you know, in terms of building permits and stuff like that. But there is pressure on them to actually start charging more for some of these things so that they can start answering some of these resiliency questions that they're seeing. And I know in Palm Beach County, there's also sales taxes as well.
Mm-hmm.
And in Palm Beach County, we had a sales tax increase that voters approved to help with that, primarily with our infrastructure. Right now, I know that they're looking at, okay, is there anything in this pot of money that we're going to be seeing over the next 10 years to start addressing some of our resiliency questions? And we have a new resiliency officer Megan Houston, who's only been on the job for about a month, and she's starting to see some of those issues that we're dealing with now. But but that big pot out of that big pot of money, I think they're assessing whether assessing how much of that may have to go towards addressing some of these sea level rise issues.
Rosemary O'Hare, I know that Broward County voters were asked for property or rather a sales tax increase as well in the 2016 election cycle, some of which could have been earmarked for these types of projects. It was kind of a little bit of a complex ask. It was a half penny for certain things for certain types of governments and a half penny elsewhere. They were tied together and ultimately lost.
Right. Half a penny for transportation, half for infrastructure. But the infrastructure backup did not focus on the infrastructure to deal with water. It was more like police buildings and parks and bike paths, and people didn't vote for that. So in terms of the where can the money come from, it could come from a sales tax increase. Some people, if it's put to people properly, and as we've seen in Miami-Dade, that have passed bonds in Miami or Miami mm-hmm. Beach, which is another financing mechanism, people will go for it if you make the case for it. In the meantime, though, because local governments, local communities can't pay the billions of dollars to move a wastewater treatment plant or a drinking water treatment plant or electrical utility plants in the infrastructure that is going to need to be addressed to deal with the water coming, what the opportunity here is for our region to come up with a plan. Be first out of the gate. You know, the thing we got going for it is that we are raising awareness. Awareness is growing. And FEMA is suggesting that they would issue some grants for places that have a plan. So the business community, too, is saying the local government, what's the plan? Mm-hmm. So in Broward, for example, the county is asking the 31 cities, what are your top three resiliency problems, projects? And they want to put together a county plan. I think that they'll do the same in Dade and Palm Beach to say, here's what we would do if you give us the money. Give it up. Let us do that. Let us show the world how that South Florida, we have a new business going down here, a new economy going down here. It'll tell the bond markets that you're worth investing because mm-hmm. we're doing big stuff.
But Nancy, I want you to talk about the complexities of these. As we all know, it's not as easy as having the municipalities come together and agree on a plan. I think if you look at Miami Beach and its resiliency plan and how it has evolved over just the past 3 or 4 years, $500 million originally for pumps and raising streets, paid for by an increase in sewer fees, and then you bond the capacity of that to come up with the hundreds of millions of dollars. New administration comes in, they hear from property owners that are complaining about, well, the streets are higher, but my front yard is no longer higher, and the water is running downhill.
Absolutely. Now. Absolutely, right. And actually, I don't blame the new mayor there for the new administration for saying, okay, let's hold up a minute.
We're going to slow walk this a little bit.
Right, exactly, yeah. And see what's working and what's not working. In the city of Miami, they, as you said, the voters approved a $400 million bond. Taxes will not go up. This is going to be right. using, as other bonds expire, this will slide right in.
Right.
But I do think that with things like FEMA grants available, this could be a job for the members of the Regional Compact of South Florida.
The Southeast Florida Climate Compact.
That's it, Climate yep. Compact, to take the lead here, to speak with that one unified regional voice, and also to encourage the municipalities and the counties to not make this a patchwork quilt of solutions where my solution might harm yeah. your city next
yeah.
door.
Yeah, the water respects no political boundaries,
right.
certainly. 800-743-9576, the invading sea here on WLRN with our partners in our project. And you're a partner as well. 800-743-9576. Let's go to Pompano Beach where Marcia has been holding on line 6. Go ahead, Marcia. You're on the radio.
Yes, hello. I was curious with what you're talking about with FEMA grants, et cetera, how they're making these grants available now, but yet 2 years ago they changed the entire floodplain layout and were suddenly 2 feet higher in the air than they previously anticipated. How are they not shooting themselves in the foot, and are they actually impacting the ability of state and local governments to be able to actually plan for these disasters? And a follow-up, why aren't we looking at countries that already have good flood planning things and using those solutions?
Great questions there, Marcia, when it comes to flood planning. Rick Christie, I'll bring you in because I think the Palm Beach flood maps were the most recent ones updated in Palm Beach County. And while certainly, Marcia, your home wasn't elevated by 2 feet, but the technology that the Federal Emergency Management Agency and its National Flood Insurance Program has used for these floodplains continues to evolve, and that means these floodplains continue to get redrawn. And Rick, some homes I know in western and central part of Palm Beach that had not been in floodplains for years all of a sudden found themselves perhaps needing flood insurance this season.
You know, some, but I think mostly it was people were finding that they don't need flood insurance. I'll be honest with you. I'm one of these people who believes the entire state of Florida is a floodplain, to be honest with you. And all of us need to have flood insurance, you know. But I think a lot of the FEMA stuff was a response to homeowners who were complaining about the fact that their area, if they were further inland, was never really flooding, and they needed to be reassessed. And some of that pressure actually came from some of our congressmen, like Lois Frankel, for example. But I want to say that with regard to stuff being paid for on the mm-hmm. local level, mm-hmm. that, and I want to say this about our federal government, that they really need to get off their butts and pass an infrastructure bill. I mean, one of the things that used to be the easiest things to pass in Congress, these guys have not been able to pass. So that some of the things that we're talking about now can be addressed on the local level, because as I believe it was Rosemary was saying earlier, and Nancy actually were alluding to, is that we're starting to get a little bit of sales tax bonding fatigue on the local level. Mm-hmm. Because in Palm Beach County, I know that there are some agencies who want to start doing more, but you have some pushback from taxpayers saying, well, gee, didn't we just pass a sales tax increase a year ago, and now you're asking me for more money?
Yeah.
And that's why the federal government needs to start doing more.
And there's been talk on some countywide referendum in Dade and Broward County about mm-hmm. A bond referendum to pay for higher salaries for teachers, for instance,
right.
That could be on the ballot
yeah.
in 2018.
But fatigue is actually starting to set in yeah. with our local taxpayers.
I think that's an important point, Rick. And, you know, there's a pot of money in the state of Florida that's supposed to be spent on the environment. Voters approved of this in 2014. It was called the Amendment
Absolutely.
1 back then. Mm-hmm. Is this a source of funding for these kinds of projects moving forward? It hasn't traditionally been seen as a source of projects to combat sea level rise or adapt to sea level rise, as opposed to buying land and keeping it away from developers.
Right.
Right. I'm sorry, Rosemary.
Yeah, I would just add, on the November ballot in Broward, we're going to have the school system is asking for a $93 million tax, and the county commission just put on a referendum for a penny sales tax increase for transportation. Neither of those deal with this issue. That Amendment 1 money has that was passed, I guess, 2 years ago or
2014. Yeah.
You know, how you can spend that money has been a source of great dispute, and it's gone to lawsuits. Initially, it was like, you know, to preserve and to maintain public lands. And then, you know, the state started using it for salaries and in different agencies, and that wasn't so lawsuit. So can that money be used to create land that will store water, that'll, you know, which we need to store more fresh water at the surface? We need to pursue that. I mean, I don't think very many people are really talking about that, though. It's because the legislature, which is not talking about
mm-hmm.
this,
right.
is not trying to find what are the solutions for Florida, and it's not just South Florida.
You cannot trust this legislature with a pot of money. We have seen the Sadowski housing funds.
Right.
Which was originally dollars came from, and then the environment amendment came in and is grabbing a share of that.
Right, yeah. Exactly. And it's just a shame because this, I think 75% of the people who went to the polls voted for
That's
Amendment
right.
1. And so they are really actively defying the will of the people here.
Let's get to some more phone calls. 800-743-9576. Christine in Palm Beach County. Go ahead, Christine.
Hi, Mr. Hudson. One of the concerns I haven't heard discussed yet is if the salt water is getting into our water aquifers and ending up in our pipe system, isn't that going to cause leaching, which could lead to lead contaminating our water?
I suppose that depends on if there's lead in the pipes, that could be a risk, Rosemary.
Absolutely, and if they're clay pipes, they'll disintegrate. Mm-hmm. The saltwater intrusion is going in pipes that it's not supposed to, which is both, you know, for sewage and for drinking water. In Fort Lauderdale, they're lining. There's this push to line the pipes to deal. And I don't know if the pipes have lead in them or not, but. The pipes that, you know, make us, if we don't have water, we're not, you know, we can't live. Our businesses can't, hospitals can't provide services. So we got to figure out how do we keep the water flowing. And it's not sexy to spend money on pipes underground. It's kind of like buying tires for your car. You know, look at my new tires. You know, who's that? That's no fun, you know.
But if your water pump busts, you're not going to be able to show off those new tires.
And you're not going to get anywhere. And we're not going to get anywhere if we don't do something about these pipes.
Yeah. Let's squeeze in one more quick call here before our break. Richard in Miami, you've been patient. Go ahead, Richard.
Yes, hello. My name is Richard Still. I just want to bring up our recent history, which is the city of Miami was rezoned 8 years ago. It took 6 years longer than expected, many millions more. Many of us raised this issue regarding infrastructure when the city was in the process of basically greatly upzoning a good part of the city, especially along the waterfront. And the city ignored it, and really the Herald ignored it as well. They were selling their lands at the time, and maybe they had a conflict of interest, but they supported Miami 21. There was virtually nothing in there about dealing with rising tides.
Right.
So it's also a local issue, and unfortunately our history seems to be that the developers pretty much call the shots. My fear is that the developers will pass the cost on to the taxpayer to help them build more condos. There hasn't been any changes over in the high-rise areas, which is really the area where there's going to be the worst flooding.
So would you like to see upzoning, in other words, zoning that is going to encourage more density?
No, quite the opposite. I think the city needs less of that, especially along the waterfront and the low-lying areas. But the city actually was already one of the highest zoned areas before Miami 21.
Mm-hmm.
And the city greatly increased what can be built in the high-rise areas in terms of real numbers of people that can be living there. And all you need to do is drive along Biscayne and look at a high-rise that was built 15 years ago or 5 years ago.
Yeah, the cranes are still there here even today. Richard, thanks for the call. Go ahead, Nancy.
You know, the Herald did support Miami 21 because of the possibility of infill and to slow down on sprawl to the west, which has its own implications on the environment and on our drinking water. And just for the record, the Miami Herald did not sell that building because it did not own that building. The decision to sell that the Bayfront property at One Herald Plaza was made by McClatchy Newspapers.
The corporate owner.
Which was the corporate owner.
That's right. Still to come here, is South Florida doomed by sea level rise? How much are you concerned by the threat? What prompted that concern? If so, 800-743-WLRN. Our conversation with the invading sea continues after this. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup here on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. As always, thanks for listening and supporting public radio. The most important issue for Floridians is the economy. 1 in 4 said so in a poll released this week from Florida Atlantic University and USA Today. That was followed by school safety. Then among specific issues, the environment was ranked 3rd. Now, interestingly, poll of voters in northern Florida had the highest concern for the environment. It was lowest with voters here in South Florida. So how much are you concerned about it? This is part of our conversation here at WLRN with our three media partners on the project The Invading Sea. You can read more at theinvadingsea.com. Miamiherald.com. Nancy Ankrum from the Miami Herald, the South Florida Sun Sentinel's Rosemary O'Hara, and the Palm Beach Post's Rick Christie are back with us. And your phone calls as well at 800-743-9576. Ricardo in Palmetto Bay told us he's very concerned, quote, "We need to get cracking on this." Maria in Little Haiti says she's very concerned because it will affect our agriculture. Jeff in Fort Lauderdale calls it number one on his lists of threats, saying, quote, "Asking about infrastructure confuses the issue." I found that comment, Rosemary, pretty interesting, especially given our most recent conversation just a few moments ago about infrastructure being the boring stuff here, but mightily important when we're talking about underpinning our quality of life and our ability to even live and subsist here.
That's right. No, you need infrastructure to operate and to run. You know, on that poll, though, I have to think it might be an outlier, because I know the Florida Chamber of Commerce does a poll, and it's an open-ended, what are your top issues? And in South Florida, in Miami-Dade and Broward, and increasingly in Palm Beach, a sea level rise is number three, and it's an open-ended question. And on the Yale Climate Opinion Maps, South Florida leads the nation, and we recognize something's happening here. The issue is, do we think it's going to have an impact on us in our life? And as we're increasingly seeing, it is already having an impact on the ability of businesses to open their doors, on the ability of people to leave their homes during a high tide and get to Home Depot. And so it's already having an impact.
And we will only be able to move the needle if all of those people who are concerned, who have made it number three on their list of priorities, make the demands on the people that they elect, from governor on down, and make it an issue. Public opinion can move this issue. We've seen it before.
As in Parkland, you know,
sure.
I mean, look at things have changed on that issue because of that.
Yeah, tremendously. 800-743-9576, Plantation, Broward County. Sam, you are up next on the radio. Go ahead, Sam.
Good afternoon. In 2000, I was on the Broward County Government Efficiency Committee, and one of the things I kept on asking for and was shut down was, we need to make our sewer system closed end and stop pulling water out of the aquifer. The second thing is, we need to be looking to, all agriculture should be, where possible, drip irrigation. And the third thing, which I've written about, is that the flood insurance policies are completely ridiculous, because they're a subsidy for people to keep building on the beaches. When they tried to make it actuarially sound in a bill called Biggert Waters, Governor Scott and his rich friends with their homes on the beach all went crazy, and they put it on a moratorium. The fact is that we're paying people to build homes and apartments on the ocean, and then when they get damaged, we subsidize their repairs. And I think there's a free market answer to a lot of this.
Yeah,
stuff.
Florida is a net contributor to the National Flood Insurance Program. It is the state with the most policies. It is the state with the highest dollar value of policies. And as you mentioned, Sam, and clearly you are in the know, that effort, which was a federal effort to right-size, market-size the flood insurance, wound up getting repealed and turned back because of so much pressure from homeowners. Maybe they were rich homeowners of mansions in South Florida, but they could have been homeowners, frankly, along the Mississippi River or the Ohio River or the Klamath River in Ohio to push back on those flood insurance programs.
And it's not just homeowners on the beach, although that is the perception. Miami-Dade has 600,000 policies in the flood insurance program. Broward has 200,000 policies in the National Flood Insurance Program. So it's not just homes on the beach that need that flood protection. It is across our very low-lying area. And it is that we are subsidizing, but there to the a private market solution. The private market left the market,
right?
And that's why government had to step in, because there's no private insurance that wants to sell flood insurance, because the risk is so high, because we're not doing what we need to do to lower the risk.
And it's worth noting, the private insurance left the flood insurance market because of a hurricane back in the 1960s. Rick Christie, we got to leave it there. Rick Christie covering the editorial page at the Palm Beach Post. Rosemary O'Hara, you just heard from her, from the South Florida Sun Sentinel. Nancy Ankrum, the editorial page editor for the Miami Herald. All three partners with WLRN in our The Invading Sea Project. More at theinvadingsea.com. Thanks so much to both of you. School is out for the summer. It's the end of the school year, and for thousands of students and families, that means graduation. So we asked listeners, if you had a chance to give a commencement speech to graduating students, what would you say? So here are a few of your 2018 commencement speakers.
This is LaShonda West of Cutler Bay.
My name is Rafael Velasquez. I live in Kendall.
My name is Vivian Bart, and I'm from Davie, Florida.
My name is Nigel Mann, and I live in West Palm Beach, Florida.
My name is Amy Jacobson, and I live in Boca Raton, Florida.
So as we invite them up to the podium for their commencement speech, their message to the new graduates?
To the graduating class of 2018, it is your mindset and determination that will get you through each experience one milestone at a time. Remember the past, live in the present, and prepare for the future. For these three measures of time will always influence you.
I have just finished my junior year in Miami Coral Park Senior High School. If I were to give a commencement speech, I would emphasize the importance of effort to succeed in life and warn about the dangers of expecting the world to owe you a living. I would implore the audience to pick their fights wisely and be considerate of those they choose to argue with. To keep a cool temper and above all else, be considerate.
I would tell the graduating class that our country needs them to be good citizens. After college, they need to get involved in the fight for decency, respect, and dignity.
What I would say to graduating high school students is never stop asking questions or learning. Have an open mind. Be tolerant of people who don't share your legacy or religion. And remember that life has both rainy and sunny days.
2018 has been a difficult year, and it has exposed many problems that exist in this world. So on that note, I would emphasize the Jewish teaching of Rabbi Hillel, who said, if not now, when?
You can read more advice.
Now's the time to repair the world, or as we say in Hebrew, tikkun olam.
You can read more advice from the listeners by visiting our website, WLRN.org. The Florida Roundup is produced by Bridget O'Brien. Our engagement editor is Katie Lepre. Technical supervisor, Jason Zabka. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening.